Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to, before I start, acknowledge my co-authors, particularly Gemma Torres, whose first part of this talk is mainly based on her PhD research. Okay, so I'm going to be talking about understanding soil carbon sequestration and storage potential in Irish grasslands and look at the effects of both soil type and land management effects. And really the objectives of our research was to assess soil organic carbon baselines for a variety of different land use types and different soil types across the island of Ireland, to assess the quality of carbon in those soils, as not all carbon is the same, and to quantify the management effects both on total soil organic carbon levels and also the quality of the carbon in that system. Okay, so if we look at soil organic matter protection, we can have biochemically protected carbon, so you have recalcitrant organic materials such as waxes, suberins, lignins, etc. You can have physiochemically protected carbon, so it's physically protected by being inside organo-mineral complexes and included inside aggregates. And you can have labile carbon, which is essentially the free particulate organic matter and chemically labile organic matter such as carbohydrates, etc. And really then you have, because of the different qualities of carbon, you can have very stable pools, or pools that have potential, which store carbon, but potentially lose them very, very easily. Okay, and we have different ways of looking at this. So we can look at physical fractionation, or we can look at acid digestion and hot water extractable carbon to look at the chemical fractionation. So that's the approaches that we took then. So again, if we look at, first of all, physical protection, what we generally tend to see is within soil aggregates, you have macro aggregates, which consist of coarse particulate organic matter bound together with things like glomalin from mycorrhiza. And they bind the coarse particulate organic matter with macro aggregates, which form inside these micro aggregates. And the micro aggregates, in turn, are made up of intra-aggregate particulate organic matter bound by clay and silt-sized particles. And over time, the macro aggregates, through decomposition, the coarse particulate organic matter decomposes and releases free micro aggregates into the soil. And then over time, those micro aggregates can decompose as well, and you have silt and clay associated carbon. So the carbon associated with silt and clay particles tends to be covalently bonded onto the silt and clay, so that tends to be very, very physically recalcitrant carbon. So we looked in our study, we were looking at 40 different soil types, 40 different soil sites. And a range of different soil types. So we looked at cambisols, which are the typical brown earths and humic brown earths, and we looked at luvisols, so soil types that had clay alluviation, such as luvisols, groundwater glaze, and typical lithosols. And what we did was basically do a wet sieving. So you first of all get your large macroaggregates, which are larger than 2 millimetres in diameter. Anything that passes through the 2,000 micrometer sieve is a macro aggregate, so we partition off that system. And then you have anything between 53 and 250 micrometers, which is the micro aggregates, and anything below 53 micrometers is silt and clay associated carbon. So if we look then at the range of the soil types that we looked at, what we can see is that for soils that have predominantly clay alluviated properties associated with them, we see a large proportion of carbon associated with microaggregates. And in the cambisols, more free draining brown earths, we see a lot more of the carbon tied up in macroaggregate carbon. And if we look then through the soil profile, what we see is that, of course, naturally enough, the largest proportion of carbon associated with the top 30 centimetres. Okay, most of the stable carbon is associated at depth, so you have the natural logarithm of aggregate size on the x-axis and the accumulated percentage of stock on the y-axis. And what you see for the point at which 50% of the carbon 50% of the carbon is accounted for in terms of aggregate size, that as you go down through the soil profile, 50% of more of the carbon is associated with smaller, more recalcitrant aggregate sizes. And here we're just comparing a brown earth to a glay sol. And what you can see is that for the glay sols here, the aggregate size where you get 50% of the carbon associated is much smaller. So you're seeing more of that carbon in the clay alluviated type soils associated with microaggregate carbon, whereas in the free draining soils, it's more associated with the faster turnover macroaggregate carbon. And this is a rather confusing graph that shows the same thing. So what we have here is in columns quadrants A and C is carbon that's associated with silt and clay and small microaggregates. So this is carbon that tends to be around for a long time. In zones B and D, it's carbon associated with macroaggregates. So what we see, first of all, naturally enough, is that most of the carbon is associated with large macroaggregates and macroaggregates, and it's in the top 30 centimetres. But if we look down here at quadrant C, which is in the subsoil, below 30 centimetres, we see that for the clay alluviated soils, about 40% of the carbon, total carbon, is associated with the longer pool turnover carbon. Whereas in the free draining soils, it's still associated with macro and large macro aggregates, probably because the roots can penetrate deeper into the soil, so you can have the formation of macroaggregates down into the subsoil, whereas you can't with clay alluviated soils where you have stagnant properties associated with them. Okay, if we look at chemical fractionation here, we're looking at essentially dissolvable organic carbon. And what we see is that we're getting for across many of the soils, and again, particularly some of those clay alluviated soils, we're getting a redeposition of dissolved organic carbon down at depth. So what's happening is that the highly dissolvable labile carbon is being dissolved. It rains quite a lot in Ireland, so it goes down through the layers and then actually reprecipitates out at depth. So you get storage of labile carbon down through the profile that way. And in terms of chemical recalcitrance, so if we look at the chemically recalcitrant pools, what we saw again was that a lot, there was much higher levels, both in terms of recalcitrant carbon, which is the lighter bars, and recalcitrant nitrogen. We were seeing much more chemically recalcitrant carbon and nitrogen in these alluviated soils. Okay, so we've been talking about the aggregates, and you know there's more of these recalcitrant pools at depth, but how long do they last in the system? What's the turnover rate? So what we did was we compared grassland, a conventionally ploughed system, and a minimum tillage with cover crop system over an 8-year period, and we pulse labelled every year with 98% atom percent 13 CO2 into replicated small plots within these different systems. So first of all, what we see in terms of aggregate distribution, in terms of macroaggregate, large macroaggregate, and microaggregate, or in terms of macroaggregates, much more carbon associated with the macroaggregate carbon in grasslands. That stands to reason because they're undisturbed systems. Macroaggregates aren't getting broken up during tillage. What we did see is that we were getting to significance after 8 years in terms of the proportion of carbon in the macroaggregate portion between conventional tillage and the non-inversion tillage systems. Then, of course, what we wanted to look at by using isotopes, you can look at the turnover rate. So the input, the plant input parent material had been labelled up to plus 2 per mil. So what we could see then was over a period, so we did a labelling over a 4-year period, and what we can see is that you see this difference in carbon isotope ratio between the higher turnover pools in the macro aggregate carbon and much less of a shift in delta 13C. much less of a shift in Delta 13C for the slower turnover pools in terms of microaggregate carbon and silt and clay associated carbon. So immediately, even without doing the calculations, you can see there's going to be differences in turnover rate between the different pools. Okay, so what we did see then, so the top graph is conventional ploughing, middle graph is non-inversion ploughing, and the bottom graph is grassland. And just note that the scale of magnitude for grassland is different to the two tillage treatments. So essentially what you see is that the highest rate of turnover of carbon in the system is for the conventionally ploughed system. There's less carbon associated with the large macroaggregates and the macroaggregates, and you're getting a faster turnover. So you're getting a breakdown of macroaggregates. You're getting, when you're getting new carbon formed into macroaggregates, there's less carbon in there. So you're getting a very high turnover rate compared to both the non-inversion tillage and particularly the grassland. Okay, the input rates of carbon are about the same, but the carbon levels in conventional ploughing are going down, whereas in non-inversion tillage they're starting to go back up again. Okay, so what we see is the highest rate of turnover for the macro aggregates ranging from 8 to 15 years. 8 years for conventional ploughing, about 15 years for grassland. Okay, the most stable pool was the silt and clay associated carbon, so more or less somewhere between 200 to maybe 1,000 years. The error bars are not very wide because we have such a small change in carbon isotope signal. And for the microaggregates, the rate of turnover ranged from 40 to 140 years. And we see that if we split apart the macroaggregates, we see the same thing again for the coarse particulate organic matter and the microaggregates here. So what we're seeing is really for the macroaggregates, the amount of carbon storage is dictated by the amount of microaggregate carbon forming within those macroaggregates. So in summary, largest proportion of physically protected carbon was below 30 centimetres, particularly on alluviated soils. Labile carbon could move down through the profile. Soils with stagnation properties had more chemically recalcitrant carbon, and the turnover rate for all the pools vary on land management. And in ultimate conclusion, it means really if you want to look at total carbon stocks, you need to go below that 30 centimetres. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. We have a couple of minutes for questions.
I missed the beginning part of the presentation. How did you define chemically recalcitrant?
Okay, so chemically recalcitrant carbon was lignin suberin. So it was basically carbon that was acid degradation resistant. But we had to be very careful with the amount of time we expose the carbon into the acid for, because if you put it in for too long, even some of that chemically recalcitrant waxes and lignins can still get broken down. So we had a lot of trials looking at different time periods that we digested for.
In your calcination method, did you leave some microaggregates in your macroaggregates?
Yes, we did break down. So I failed to mention one of the other two steps that we did. We did a density flotation as well with polytungstate, and we also did a sonication of macroaggregates to break up the macroaggregates and get the microaggregate, the coarse particulate organic matter, and the silt and clay associated carbon as well.
So in the silt and clay fraction, you provided what you thought was an average turnover time of 500 to 1,000.
Yeah, but again, there's a huge error bar around that because of small shifts.
I was going to ask, how much of that do you think is driven by a very, very old pool that is in fact covalently bonded to the mineral surface, and there's still a much faster cycling?
Yes, there could be, absolutely, and I don't know is the answer. Mm-hmm.